She reduces, reuses, and recycles. She talks the talk and walks the walk. She doesn't tell you what to think. She just wants you to. She's Mrs. Green. And this is Mrs. Green's World on the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. You are indeed listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think, we just want you to. This show is sponsored by the Fairfax Companies. Thank you, Fairfax Companies, for everything you do to make our planet a healthier and safer one, and for your support of Mrs. Green's World. I am so proud to say that I have a truly, another truly important guest with us with a very big mission in his life, impacting the very health of our children, which of course impacts their families. Dr. Jay Gordon is a pediatrician practicing for the past 34 years, and he is also author of a new book, Preventing Autism, What Can You Do to Protect Your Children Before and After Birth? And I am fairly certain that some of the facts that Dr. Gordon will share with you and me will surprise us and concern us. Why should we care? I think Dr. Gordon will make the case, Dr. Jay Gordon. And I have one brief announcement about our national sponsor, Ecobella. You know, folks, it's June, and it's hard to believe that it's June. It's a get-outside month for so many millions of us all over the country. Take to the beaches, take to the lakes, take to hikes. So please make sure that you protect your skin from the sun when you're spending time outside. And please, especially after you hear this show, please read the ingredients in your products to make sure that you're not doing more harm than good for your health, because of the harsh hidden chemicals in many of them. And you know, you really can take all the worry about purchasing skincare products with Ecobella. And it's two C's. They are a sponsor of mine. I disclose that every show. I did my homework before we started the partnership. They have an age antidote day cream with SPF 15 that I use. And I encourage you to check them out at their website, www.ecobella with two C's, E-C-C-O-B-E-L-L-A. And as I have said many times on the show before, it is so important to support companies like Ecobella for our own health and the health of the planet, and we should care. So we're in a little situation here. I don't think Dr. Gordon has gotten on the show yet.
Yes, I have.
Yes,
I am.
You have. Welcome. I know you were with a patient doing the work.
I was busy being a doctor, but now I'm here.
Well, you're busy.
I'm very happy to be here.
You know, you have no idea. I shared with your assistant, or maybe your wingman, like I have a wingman.
She is my wingman.
Yeah, my background, I have a 30-year background in managing large volume mental health contracts. So when I got contacted by your publicist or whoever, I was like, you've got to be kidding me. This is such a subject that's near and dear to my heart. I have read most of the book, and I'm like doing red marks saying, OMG, OMG, he's so right, he's so right. We have to get the word out. So let's just keep it all about you and getting the word out. And I have about 3.5 pages of questions, and hopefully we'll get through one page of them.
I'll try not to be long-winded. I've got 6 pages of answers, so
that's really good. So we should do well with that. And I think we should simply start with a definition of autism in layman's terms, and it's a 3-part question, which I typically do. And how is it diagnosed, and when is it diagnosed? Because I think there are some prizes in that answer. So what is autism?
Autism is unfortunately a relatively common disorder of communication, social skills, and repetitive behavior. People affected by autism or autism spectrum disorders do often have trouble speaking. The worst autism spectrum disorders leave children and teens and adults with no language. Some of the kids learn how to speak later, and many of them just have trouble with language just as it evolves. They also have trouble in social settings. Social interactions can be quite difficult. They don't read faces as well. I can't quite tell if you're happy with what I just said to you or angry or sad. They have trouble making friends. Autism gets diagnosed a little bit late. Autism also involves repetitive behaviors, the classic being rocking and spinning and so on. Flapping, hand flapping is a cliched but true manifestation of autism spectrum disorders. The diagnosis should be made early in life. It should be made in the first or second year of life. I recently read an article, a mainstream article, that said, you know, autism can sometimes be diagnosed as early as age 2.5, even though the average age is 3 or 3.5 in America. Autism and autism spectrum issues show up in the first year. At my 9-month-old checkups, I watch for not just eye contact, but I watch for a child's attention to what I'm doing, what parents are doing as they leave the plane of vision. And between 9 and 15 months of age, the biggest milestone of them all is pointing. Kids who have autism do not indicate. They don't want to bring you into their worlds. It's actually the title of a movie, Autism is a World.
So parents who are first-time parents, unless they really became well-informed by reading books like yours and really being thoroughly engaged in looking for things, they could think everything's just fine for the first 9 months of their child's life. Is that true? Is that fair to say?
It is fair to say, but many of the parents I've spoken to will tell me that in hindsight, they notice something
they
just
notice
a little
something.
Bit different. The kids who are at risk, one of the number one risk factor for developing autism is having a sibling with autism, or a first-degree relative, as they say. It could be your mother, your father. And these kids who are at risk are studied from pregnancy, and then certainly studied in the first 6 or 12 months of life in major centers all over the country. UCLA probably being one of the best in my neighborhood, or in my neighborhood, it's one of the best in the world.
And I think
they can see differences.
And they'd say, okay, I really noticed that something was a little bit strange, and it's not
yes.
so astounding that it stops you in your tracks. And I think one of the things that shocked me when I did my research is I've been saying to people, and it is because of my mental health background, it's epidemic. 1 in 88 kids are diagnosed. And then your book came, and it's far greater than that. So can you talk about that a little bit? How many children are on the autism spectrum according to a very recent CDC, Center for Disease Control, survey?
One out of 50.
That blew my
mind.
One
out of 50. The CDC, they say that every doctor has a story about internship. Every doctor who's been in practice for 20, 30 years or more, we talk about how when we were in residency, at some point during our rotation on the pediatric floor, an older doctor or doctor would say, come into this room and look at this child because he has something you may never see again. He has autism, and we'll walk into a room and the child will be very unusual, different than anybody we've seen that day or that month. And now you can walk into most classrooms, you can spend a day in my office, and there will be a child on the autism spectrum. 1 out of 50 children in America have autism. 1 out of 35 boys have autism. There are states where the incidence is even higher than that. And it's very, very, very common. It affects millions of people in America, tens of millions of families around the world.
And here's the question that goes out of order from all of the sequence I have. Some people say that, well, it's always been the case, but it's just now being diagnosed. And I'm just going to tell you the truth about what I say. I say that's absolutely and positively not true. And I go on my little, you know, my little diatribe about, do you have any idea how compromised our food supply is? And do you know how many more toxins we have in our home? And I go, you know, blah, 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 about things have changed. My mother did raise us in a healthier environment. And I did eat, you know, better foods. But guess what? I'm not the expert. How would you respond to that? Are there better diagnostic tools? Or is it really we are poisoning ourselves, which we will go into some of the very disturbing things you brought out in your book, which weren't disturbing to me. I'm like, hallelujah, he's telling the truth.
Well, yeah, thank you. Yes, I did tell the truth. My career began a little over 30 years ago. and the incidence of autism was one out of many thousands of children. It's now one out of 50. Yes, we're diagnosing it better, we're more aware, we've refined the diagnosis, but I am not hundreds of times smarter than I was then. I'm not. There is much more autism, much, much more. There are many more children who are being noted to have social interactive problems, language problems, repetitive behavior. And again, more cliches. I mean, the autism activists say, well, where are the adults with autism if it was always around? There are adults with autism. There aren't that many of them. So it's extremely real. It has to do with the fact that, as you just mentioned, our environment has gotten more toxic.
Everywhere.
We have genetics.
Everywhere.
We have genetics and we have epigenetics. And the simple answer to what is epigenetics? Epigenetics is everything that isn't genetics. If you are foolish enough to spray your house for spiders once a week, you are putting chemicals into the air which adversely affect hormone systems of the body. If your child has a lot of plastic toys, and on, we have a lot of influences on our genes which were not there decades ago.
And, you know, you just it brings me back. It's your book was such a validation to me. So thank you so much for writing that so I felt validated. But I go back to when I was a kid, which is not 100 years ago. We played outside. Even when we were inside, we didn't have a bunch of toys and plastics and things like that to do. In winters in New Jersey, the way that we ate was so differently, even from the way that I fed my children. I had a stay-home mom. I mean, I have nightmares that I gave my kids Lunchables, and my kids don't eat Lunchables now, but, you know, we're on the way to school, and mom worked late, and dad was already gone for work. Let's go to the convenience store, and here's a Lunchable, which at this point I believe is absolutely and positively devoid of any real food. I don't think there's a bite of it in there, and also toxic chemicals. So let's start with the disturbing relationships that you discuss in your book, and let's say the name of it again because I can't say enough. Preventing Autism, What You Can Do to Protect Your Children Before and After Birth. Talk about some of the disturbing relationships. I mean, I stopped getting my house sprayed 4 years ago with toxic chemicals to keep scorpions out because the toxins had a better chance of harming me than the scorpions. I have an eco-friendly pest control guy that's as crazy as I am.
When you go shopping for dish soap, you can purchase a product either from The Honest Company or from Seventh Generation. And you look at that dish soap or you look at the cleaner or the shampoo and you turn the bottle around and it says, if ingested, drink a glass of water, which you probably could have figured out. You can also buy dish soap or shampoo. There's on Johnson & Johnson's label, there's a note by their baby shampoo. It says, keep out of reach of children. Okay. And then you can buy dish soap and it says...
That should be your first clue.
That's a very good clue. You can look at the back of a bottle of certain soaps, and it says, if ingested, drink copious amounts of water and milk, call poison control immediately. Don't put that in your house. We have, again, genes, the same genes that we've had in human beings for a long, long time, many centuries, millennia. But on top of those genes, we have influences. And as you've alluded to, one of them involves plasticizers. We know that BPA and other chemicals found in plastics can interfere with normal development of hormone systems in utero and as a child grows. We know this. The old number is 80,000 chemicals. The new number is closer to 250,000 chemicals. There are, let's just say 80,000. There are 80,000 chemicals well known to be used in manufacturing and in food production. 3,000 of those chemicals have been tested for safety. 77,000 have not been. Many of these chemicals, hundreds of them, are illegal in Europe and other places. And in the United States, we wink and we allow the manufacturers to slightly tweak the molecule and then add a slightly different flame retardant to children's pajamas, children's clothing of other kinds, and children's furniture. People do spray their houses. The problem with GMOs, in my opinion, is not that there's some strange Frankenstein corn being developed, but Roundup Ready seeds have been created to resist Roundup. Roundup is a poison. They spray that poison on crops, and it kills whatever it kills, whether it's fungus or insects. But it also killed the corn. It killed the crops. So what the company did, what Monsanto did, was to create seeds that would resist, that could grow even though we were poisoning them. And somewhere along the line, somebody forgot that that poison ended up in the corn, in the crop, and then in us. So Roundup Ready seeds, the GMO, again, that's as far as I'm concerned, it's not good, but that part of that, the strange part of it's up in the air. The more common issue is if you create a seed that can be poisoned further, the poison ends up in humans. And it affects the way babies grow. It affects the way children grow. It affects our brains.
And it affects the earth and the pesticides that go onto the earth and into the rivers and into the fish. I mean, it's all part of the same food chain. I mean, if this was a TV show, you would see me get up and do like the happy dance, because I so believe, after working this very, very passionately for 5 years in terms of environmental awareness, that everything you're saying is true. Do you want to eat, if you're not a doctor, if you haven't been a practicing pediatrician for almost 35 years, do you want to eat something that's called Roundup Ready? I don't need a lot of scientific support on this one. It's like, no, I really don't. And I did some public speaking recently, and someone asked me about Monsanto, and it just slipped out, and everybody cracked up. I said, I think they're the devil. And I don't usually say that. It's not very professional, but it's like they are a huge cause of a lot of the things that you're talking about. Now, you mentioned a number, 80,000 chemicals. So about 3,000 of them have been maybe marginally tested in the United States.
They don't kill you.
They don't kill you. Isn't that great? What doesn't kill you makes you stronger. No, what doesn't kill you makes you sicker. So when you go down to the macro level, which I love to do for my listeners, I've written blogs about this where I've said, I'm living consciously. I have weeded out so much from our home. My family's on board. My husband's very supportive. When I get up to the time I go out the door, I have put 13 products on my body, and I'm a minimalist. I'm not a, you know, a regular applier, but I am sure that every single one of those, it's, you know, shampoo, it's conditioner, it's soap, it's, you know, three different, you know, the toner and the all the stuff that I do for my skin,
sunscreen,
the hair products. So for me, a minimalist, my lipstick, there are terrible things in lots of lipsticks. That's getting better.
Yeah.
But you're talking about, these are things that people might not think about, that that are poisons in their home, can absolutely kill their children if they're swallowed, and then are being washed down the drain to go into the water. So that's, you know, that's disturbing. What you share is so right, and got me front and center about it again. Okay, so let's go on to, you know, question number 30 here. I'd like to know, at what point in your career did you say, you know what, something's really wrong here. I'm seeing more kids with this. And not only do that, but then become active and gathering the research to write such an important book that I don't believe is just for parents. I believe everybody who is committed to living consciously should read your book, because it is great for autism, but it's how we should be living. When did you have an aha moment and said, oh?
I did have an aha moment. In writing this book, one of the agreements I made with the publisher and my co-author, Diane Reverend, who shaped my incoherent thoughts into a book. One of the agreements was that we would not discuss vaccines very much. The topic is too hot. It's controversial. I can't prove what I believe, so I shouldn't talk quite as loudly. But my aha moment, and this had to do with vaccines, and then it extended. My aha moment came some months into practice in the early 1980s.
Wow.
When I began to get phone calls from parents, 2 or 3 days after vaccinating their children. And back then, by the way, we had the old DPT, which was a miserable shot. It was not a good shot. And they would call me two or three days after the shot, and they'd say, you know, he's acting a little different. I can't quite put my finger on it, but he's a little different. Does that have to do with the vaccine? And my answer was no. I mean, I was a very conventionally trained pediatrician. I said, no, this is, you know, we gave him a shot, and he's a little off. I got enough of those phone calls to make me realize that I was doing something wrong with vaccines.
Wow.
I had a vaccine which eventually got taken off the market because of its danger, and I was giving it without a second thought to two-month-olds. So I did something very radical back then. I started giving it at 4 months of age and not 2 months. And I started listening to parents who said, we don't want the DPT. We hear it's the bad shot. Can you give us a DT? I said, yes, even though your child is therefore at greater risk of whooping cough. And as the years went by, and I began to eat better, I've been a vegetarian since the last year of medical school. As the years went by, and I watched what people did, and you talk about shampoos and conditioners and soaps, and for adults, deodorant and lipstick and makeup and sunscreen and so on, I realized that those labels were hiding a lot of toxins, and we had no idea what those were doing. I mean, of all the brains in my exam room with three adults and a child, of all the brains, there's only one that's growing rapidly, and that's the little two-month-olds or the two-year-olds. And if we incorporate chemicals, unknown chemicals, into that developmental milieu, we're taking risks.
Big risks. I mean,
yes,
big risks.
Question marks like crazy. And it's avoidable. Now, my book is one of the reasons.
We're going to take a quick break.
Yes,
hold that thought. We'll be right back.
I'll take that with you.
Okay, we have Dr. Jay Gordon, who's talking to us about life-saving things, protecting our children from autism before and after birth. Please stay here with me.
University of Arizona professor John Pollard asked the students in the Posada San Pedro Hall to consider bringing solar energy to the dorm. Just 3 years later, the Solar Cats, a group of students who took up the cause, have installed 44 solar panels on the dorm, saving 20,000 kilowatt hours of energy and reducing greenhouse gas emissions by 14 metric tons every year. Talk about students with a sunny future. The University of Arizona, big questions, bold solutions, better tomorrows.
It's got advanced technology. It's got major breakthroughs in technology everywhere you look. It's the 2013 Honda Accord. Hi there, this is Mrs. Green, and I want to share with you that after nearly 40 years of heritage, this is the most stunning Accord ever. The highly respected Automotive Magazine raves that the 2013 Honda Accord offers unparalleled talent of goodness. Please visit Chapman Honda at 4646 East 22nd Street in Tucson to check it out and see for yourself.
You know how they say your donation to Goodwill changes lives?
Well, it's true.
It's true.
Well, it's true.
Goodwill.
Goodwill gave my son a chance.
My mom, hope.
My brother, a sense of purpose.
And help my dad find a job.
Goodwill helps thousands of people.
People like us every year.
People like us.
Every year.
Your donations to Goodwill do change lives. Please donate today.
Go deep underwater without getting wet. Study bugs like a real scientist. Make your shadow move in colors. These are just three reasons to visit the exciting hands-on new exhibits at the Children's Museum Tucson, the region's only museum just for kids. For 25 years, we've ignited kids' imaginations at the Children's Museum Tucson. That's something to celebrate. And admission is only $2 on the first Sunday and on the 25th of each month this whole year. Children's Museum Tucson, where imagination and learning connect.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And we are certainly giving everyone who's listening and who will listen a great deal of things to think about. We are pleased to have as our guest Dr. Jay Gordon. He is a practicing pediatrician for the past 34 years in Santa Monica, and very importantly is the author of a new book, Preventing Autism, What You Can Do to Protect Your Children Before and After Birth. And Jay, I have to share a funny, because it's my show and I do this. We got so caught up, my board engineer and I, in what you were saying, that we weren't watching the clock. So that's a high compliment. It's like all of a sudden the bumper music went on. It's like, oh my gosh, we have to take a break. And I'm sitting here like kind of with my mouth open saying, OMG. So we apologize for that abrupt end. Our board operator in Massachusetts will not be very happy with us. He likes,
I'll watch the clock for you.
He likes smooth transitions. But what you have to say is so very important to me for the health and survival of our planet. And believe me, I don't say that lightly. That's not like a that's not a gimme. So let's pick up where we left off. You brought up the very, it is controversial subject of vaccines and vaccinating your children. I have a daughter who absolutely refused to vaccinate her children. And we live in such a fear-based society that I was afraid that she was doing that. My mother-in-law had polio, so, and I'm in Rotary, and we work to, you know, eradicate polio around the globe. So tell us, just go into that a little more. I think it's a wonderful discussion and learning opportunity for me and all of our listeners.
We vaccinate without a lot of science behind the combinations. At some point in the development of all medication, except for vaccines, there are phase one, phase two, phase three studies where we work our way up to using the new antihypertensive or the new antibiotic on mice and rats and monkeys, whether we should or we shouldn't, and I think we shouldn't, but we work our way up to these things. With vaccines, the studies were not complete enough. The flu vaccine is not even tested on children until it's out in the out for sale. We have never adequately tested the idea of combining four or five or six vaccines on a single day, and I think we're making mistakes. Now the trouble is, as I was saying, I can't prove it. I don't mean to say that vaccines cause all cases of autism or that everybody who gets vaccines is at risk, but I think that there's a small but significant percentage of kids who are at risk from receiving vaccines at 2 months of age. Even if you think vaccines are the greatest invention in all of medicine, it doesn't make sense to give a hepatitis B vaccine at birth and six more vaccines 2 months later and six more 2 months after that. It's not a scientifically great way to do it. It's a very expedient and economically brilliant thing to do, to sell you six more things at the end of a visit. But we should be vaccinating much more slowly. We should be studying the combinations. We should realize that certain vaccines are not as important or as relevant as they were. And I'll tell you a real secret. Pediatricians agree. Behind closed doors, most doctors will tell you that they're very willing to give vaccines a little slower. Many pediatricians will admit that they didn't give their two-month-old babies six vaccines at the two-month visit. But immorally and unethically, we still put this out as the public face of the American Academy of Pediatrics and the CDC.
And very much, really, there's such an influence of the drug lobby, too. I mean, we could go, yeah, like you and I, I'm sure, could do a whole series on that. And, you know, not just pediatricians, but a really dear friend of mine is a pediatric neurologist here at the University of Arizona Medical Center. And she's a very dear friend. And this issue is driving her crazy, specifically all of the number of kids that she's seeing for, quote-unquote, neurological disorders and the age at which they are coming in. And as soon as you contacted me, I was on the phone with her. She's really excited that we're doing this interview. And she wants to be part of the, you know, the prevention brigade. If it's okay with you, there's a quote I want to read because I think it's a perfect segue that's in your book in chapter 3. And it is related to the drug companies and insurance companies. And you say there has been some discussion about narrowing the spectrum for an autism diagnosis by focusing on classic autism, which arguably you might say, what is classic autism? This would certainly reduce the numbers, but a staggering number of children still have developmental disorders. The problem will exist however they are diagnosed. Problems. Referring to the problem by another name does not change anything except insurance coverage. You should see the markup in my book about that. It's like exclamation point, dot, 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 circle. So is this something that we have to worry about, where the insurance companies are saying, oh, there's too much of this disease. We have to stop reimbursing doctors and medical systems for this autism, this pesky autism spectrum disorder.
Oh, yes. And it's not just the insurance industry. It's schools. But just to get back to the insurance industry or the pharmaceutical industry, when your child is diagnosed, and it could be ADHD, it could be autism spectrum, it could be major speech delay, the insurance company should give you a big hug. They should say to you, look, take care of your child, do whatever you have to do in terms of getting therapy, behavioral therapy, evaluation, diagnosis. You take care of that. Whatever you do, don't worry about the money involved, because you've been paying insurance premiums for 20 years. You don't need to worry about the money. And instead of saying that to the parents, what they do is they tell them to get lost. They tell them that we'll reimburse you for three visits to the speech therapist, and unless behavioral therapy is proven to be effective in this particular case, they won't pay for it. It's absolutely ridiculous. And now with the push to convince people that there really isn't as much autism, but instead we're overdiagnosing, they're going to try to reimburse fewer people. And the school systems are at great risk, because there's really no place in most school systems for kids with various types of autism spectrum issues, let alone all the kids with ADHD and the kids with OCD and so on. We've got something wrong. The CDC, in addition to that 1 out of 50 number, the CDC announced again last week that 1 out of 5 children in our school system has a learning disability. It may range from mild dyslexia to severe autism spectrum issues, but 1 out of 5, that costs a lot of money. And I've seen families who went bankrupt spending the $50,000 to $100,000 a year that they needed to do what they had to do for their child with autism.
It's just staggering to me. And I go back to the point, which is you can absolutely sincerely know why I have so much respect for you and what you're saying, is that the insurance companies, if they were smart, would do what you said, because in the long run, they would benefit from it. This is contributing to the well-being of a child continuously, so they will not end up in their system or in the juvenile justice system. I mean, there are so many complexities in the real world of not early diagnosis, prevention, and treatment. I mean, I don't usually cry in my radio shows, but this one could certainly bring me to tears. When you talk about prevention, I'd like to talk a lot about that. I'd like to talk about a couple of other chapters in your book. Can autism really be prevented in some cases?
I do believe it can be. I think that there are people whose genetics are putting them on the edge of having autism or diabetes or arthritis. We know this, by the way, about certain illnesses, certain medical conditions, and that there is some kind of an environmental impact that triggers that diabetes or that autism. And I think that if we can convince more people to lead non-toxic lives, take better care of their eggs, better care of their sperm, take better care of their pregnancies, avoid, again, certain cleaning products and plastics and pesticides and so on, that we can prevent some cases of autism. We're not going to prevent all cases of autism. I've seen some very, 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 very clean situations, non-toxic situations, where the children developed autism spectrum issues, and I don't know what caused it. But yes, I really do believe we can prevent cases of autism. The title of the book, which wasn't necessarily the title I wanted, overstates the case. We can't prevent autism any more than we can prevent cancer or prevent arthritis. Those books sell well, too. But what we can do is we can decrease the number of kids and the number of families. There's a wing of autism advocacy, which is diversity, they say is good, and I agree. And they say that there's nothing wrong with my child. He has autism. He's not less than your child. We love him no less. Of course you love him no less. And of course he's not less than I am. But it's been my experience, and it's very well published, that families with children who have autism lead harder lives, more expensive lives. And there aren't very many people who have one child with autism who would like their second child to have autism because it's harder. So no, I don't want to diminish the worth of these children. I don't want to diminish the love that their families feel, but it would be very nice if children who do not have to go through these communication and social problems didn't have to go through them, if we could do something to lessen the incidence of autism.
And have you seen, this is again going back to my friend whose name I don't want to say on the show because she wants to really be very professional, like you said, behind closed doors, but she is absolutely getting ready to do a research project about it. She says that she has actually seen kids, what she would say, the symptoms have been reversed by parents who take control of their environment, of their child's diet. And so maybe not eliminated, but the symptoms drastically reduced by eliminating those environmental toxins and by healthy diets.
Yes.
Have you seen that?
Yes. I've watched people who have changed their children's, they've changed their children's diets, added supplements, and the children who didn't speak began to speak. I've watched children lose the diagnosis of autism over 3 to 5 years, and it had to do with modifying many, many things in the child's life, whether it had to do with nutrition or environmental impact. And I do believe I know that that happens. Again, this is studied and published. It's controversial. A gluten-free diet is better for everybody. A sugar-free diet or a low-sugar diet, for heaven's sakes, is better for everybody. A dairy-free diet, a casein-free diet, is better for everybody. I don't know why there's such pushback, although I do know why, because there's a lot of money involved in the dairy
industry. Exactly. It's all about earnings per share and profit margins. That's it. It drives a lot of what goes on.
But medically, we know these things. You know, the doctors stopped eating red meat long before they told their patients to stop eating red meat in normal American quantities. Long before.
And it's rather daunting to me. So you have a chapter in your book that I was, you know, renaming some of the chapters or adding them a little bit because it's chapter 9 and it's entitled What to Do When You Are Expecting. And then I put underneath it, or not, because to me, it does. This is a blueprint and a way for people to live. It's great if you're expecting and you want to be a healthy mom, but you know, I have the book in front of me, and I can tell you things like drinking filtered water, you know, alcohol in moderation, I think, is probably fine. I've switched totally to a glass of red wine occasionally. You say reduce or eliminate caffeine consumption. Do you know how hard it was for me as a pregnant mom when I was to stop drinking Diet Coke because I was addicted? And that, you talk about the devil, that's like drinking a toxic cocktail.
It's addictive, yes.
And Jay, I will tell you this. I have gotten off Diet Coke, and there are days when I wake up and I thank my kingdom for a 32-ounce Thirst Buster, and I don't do it. That's how long, it's been years since I have done that, but it is an addiction. Number 5, eat unprocessed foods. Better for all of us, better for the planet, better for the oceans, better for the earth. Eat organic whenever possible. Let's expand on that one a little bit, because I'm sure you have a retort. I'm getting really good at it. Eating organic is so much more expensive. True
well,
or not
it,
true?
It can be more expensive, but it doesn't have to be.
It doesn't.
There's the Environmental Working Group and Healthy Child, Healthy World and other websites have a list of 10 or 12 foods that you must eat organically only.
The Dirty Dozen and the Clean 15.
Right, exactly.
Love
and
it.
Those are available. I think there's even a link in the book.
There is. Environmental Working Group. I write it every spring. I write their back, the Dirty Dozen, the Clean 15. Of course, this year, it's the Dirty Dozen Plus, which really is not where you want to see. You want to see the Clean 15 Plus. But it's...
Exactly.
There's more kale and, I think, butternut squash. They have found traces of an old, now outlawed chemical on kale. I mean, that's like the superfood that we eat in our smoothies every day.
Right, and it's just awful that they do that.
It is just awful.
Yes, it may be more expensive at times to buy organic food. There's no question. But that's again one of the twists on an old joke. I mean, if you think eating well is expensive, try illness.
Yeah, pay now or pay later.
And I gave a talk recently at a conference last weekend, and I talked about the things we could do, and I could see more than a few of the parents in the crowd getting annoyed, and they said, well, what if you don't have unlimited funds? You can clean with water and vinegar. You can grow food whenever possible, and you can choose from that clean list of fruits and vegetables purchased without conventionally grown, and so on. Yes, it can cost more, and it's not your fault or my fault that we subsidize bad foods. We subsidize beef and dairy, and we leave the broccoli and kale farmers out to dry. But you need to allocate your resources as carefully as you can. There's no question.
And here's the irony for me. Sometimes those people that are saying that have a latte in their hand from Starbucks that costs $5 or $6. It's like, really? So you know how much kale you could have bought for that? Anyway, I don't want to become cliche and have people run when they see me coming. So we have to take another short break. I am thrilled to be interviewing Dr. Jay Gordon, who is a practicing pediatrician for the past 35 years in Santa Monica. He's the author of a new book, Preventing Autism, What You Can Do to Protect Your Children Before and After Birth. Indeed, again, my shout out that it's a book for all of us. And when we come back, Jay, I'd really like to talk a little bit about the chapters in your book about home detox, that's one of them, and a little bit more about the prevention piece for your health and what we should be eating. Everybody, please stay here with me. We'll be right back.
Join us for a new Mrs. Green's World episode every Saturday at 12 noon Arizona time at MrsGreensWorld.com. All of our past shows are available as on-demand podcasts at MrsGreensWorld.com. Listen on your computer or mobile device. Connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram. Mrs. Green's World is a proud member of the Dream Vision 7 and Castle Rock Radio Networks. If you have questions about the show, write to us at info@MrsGreensWorld.com. We'd love to hear from you. More Mrs. Green's World next.
Hi, I'm Abbott Taylor. With over 35 years creating jewelry in Tucson, no one has more experience in designing and making diamond jewelry in Tucson than Abbott Taylor Jewelers. Please come in and see some of the thousands of designs we have created, or come in and have us design something original just for you. Whether you're looking for a simple and stylish graduation gift, your engagement ring, or a breathtaking jewelry piece to celebrate an important birthday or anniversary, you can't beat our competitive diamond pricing. With 100% trade-up guaranteed, set in an Abbott Taylor jewelry design, always using earth-friendly recycled gold. Abbott Taylor Jewelers, exquisite jewelry designs and exceptional diamond deals created right here in Tucson for over 35 years. Abbott Taylor Jewelers at 6383 East Grant Road, on Facebook and on the web at atdiamonds.com. Diamond designs for everyone. Abbott Taylor Jewelers.
Hi there, this is Mrs. Green. The 2013 VW Jetta TDI is the sedan people love to love. It comes with a zippy turbocharged diesel engine that's 90% cleaner burning than previous diesel engines, and it goes farther on a tank of gas than a Toyota Prius. Chapman Volkswagen has a great selection of Jetta TDIs, so choose yours today at ChapmanTucson.com or in person at 4646 East 22nd Street in Tucson.
At the University of Arizona, we're putting solar know-how to work. And it's not just our researchers. Our students are on the job as well. Our student solar racing team, using recycled solar cells from NASA, designed and built a car from scratch that gets the equivalent of over 3,000 miles per gallon. Talk about students who will go far. Really, really far. The University of Arizona. Big questions, bold solutions, better tomorrows.
Habitat for Humanity's Habitat Store is changing the world. By selling new and used building and home improvement materials to the public, the Habit Store is diverting more than 250 tons from the landfill each year. To donate, call 520-889-7200. Stop by and shop today. The Habit Store is located at 935 West Grant Road. Proceeds from all the sales go to Habitat for Humanity Tucson. For more information, go to habitattucson.org or call 520-889-7200.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And I certainly can guarantee you that everyone listening to this show is being given the gift of a lot to think about. I am so pleased to have with us Dr. Jay Gordon. He's a pediatrician practicing in Santa Monica for the past 34 years. He is also the author of a new book, Preventing Autism, What You Can Do to Protect Your Children Before and After Birth. If you just joined us, here's a little factoid that will knock your socks off. There has been a 78% increase in autism over the past 10 years, folks. 78% overdiagnosis is not responsible for the increase. It's such a gift when you get a guest that affirms everything that you believe, that I, as Mrs. Green and as Gina Murphy Darling, believe in my ever, never ending mission to create consciousness and get people to think. So, Jay, thank you so much, not only for being here, but for what you've done. I think we should start this segment with a call to action, because I don't want to run out of time at the end of the show. And my producer always says, don't forget about the call to action. So what my call to action would be is for everyone who's listening to this show, get the book. You want to have it at your bedside. You want to help it. You want it to help you shopping for your life. I don't care if you're getting pregnant or if you're 63 or 78. It's never too late to lead a healthy life. So I would say the call to action is go to Amazon.com, get it on your Nook, your iPad, buy the hard copy, go to your locally owned bookstore, but get the book. So there's my call to action, Jay. It's like, can you tell I feel passionate about this subject?
I like your call to action. It's like, buy the book.
Let's buy the book, because it's not just about autism. I want to really make that abundantly clear and not beat a dead horse. So it's all about you. Would you like to go a little bit more into diet, or should we talk a little bit more about home detoxing? We haven't really talked much about that at all, and it's a great chapter in your book about detoxing your home being a strong defense.
Yes. There's a study going on, a 21-year study called the National Health Study. 21 years, spending $6.5 billion, and they're starting off finding women who are pregnant, going into their homes and vacuuming the dust on their side of the bed, which is a marker for flame retardants and heavy metals.
Oh,
they're following the pregnancy, they're drawing blood, cord blood, and so on. And over the next 7 to 21 years, we're going to find out something that we already know, which is that people who have more toxins in their houses, more flame retardants, more heavy metals, more pesticides, more plastics, have children who have more problems. We know this. We're going to quantify it, but one of the subtitles for the book was going to be, we can't wait 21 years. There's no reason to wait 21 years when very simple measures can change things. Throw away cleaning products which give you stern warnings about their toxicity. Clean your house with vinegar and water. Permanent press clothes, which look much better at 11 or 12 in the morning, which look better at noon, are permanent press because they have plastics in them. Most furniture has a lot of flame retardant. Older furniture might be better because it may have outgassed. Buy your floor covering more carefully. Use better paints. They may be a little bit more expensive, you're right, but the low or no VOC paints make a difference. Home detoxification is not as hard as people think it is, and you're not going to get all the way there. This was another objection from some of the people in the audience last week. You know, we can't possibly do all these things. I said, that's right. Neither can I. We live here. We breathe this air. The water is pretty good when you purify it, and not perfect. Every single food that you eat in a restaurant or at a friend's house might not be organically grown. Do the best you can. You can get, if you get halfway there, that's great. If you get 80% of the way there, you're doing even better. But you can detoxify your house with very simple measures. The book starts off, I think, perhaps a little too scary, but it's the truth. The government does not protect us from toxins in clothes and in cleaning products
at
and in our
all.
Lives.
At
and,
all.
And we have to do it ourselves. They don't protect our children. We have to do it ourselves. But then I go on to write about and talk about in my daily visits in the office, because I work 7 days a week. I talk about the continuation, about how we are not powerless. We can avoid many of these chemicals. We can avoid many of the toxins that have been allowed to invade our lives.
So here's the shocking things, and in your book it's not a downer at all to me. It was like, I don't know, it was inspiring. And when you talk about detoxifying your home, I would make the case that it is fairly easy and that it's so much cheaper. Do you know how much vinegar you can buy for like a dollar? Seriously,
yeah.
I mean, it's really less expensive. And I keep being haunted by this thought of a woman I had on my show when I was on Clear Channel, which is, you know, was about 4.5 years ago. And that is one time I did cry on the show. And I can't find who she was in the archives. But her daughter died from a toxin on the carpet that her daughter kept licking. And she got a hole in her tongue. It was a very extreme case. And this turned her into an activist. It was a harsh chemical that this little girl was extremely sensitive to. And obviously, if she's on national radio, I mean, I researched her to a fairly well. And it was like, you've got to be kidding me. From a flame retardant or something on her tongue. And I read about that. So in your book, going back to this, this is why I think the book is for everyone. More example. Four groups of people are most affected by indoor chemicals. It's on page 123. Developing fetuses, infants and toddlers, the sick and the elderly. Well, we have a huge, rapidly expanding elderly population. They spend more time indoors and their immune systems are weaker. Babies spend time crawling around and playing on the floor. And did you ever see, this is me, I'm getting off what you wrote, but did you ever see a baby not put everything in their mouth? As soon as they get everything, it's in their mouth. They taste and chew everything. Children are often exposed to pesticides that are brought inside on shoes. The pesticides trapped in a carpet break down more slowly than outdoors in sunlight. I'm like, OMG, why wouldn't everybody want to read that? Because who wants to hurt a baby or an old person? I felt it's like,
yes.
So talk about some of the toxins, the common household toxins. I'm sure that you can.
They make carpets out of junk. I mean, unless you buy your carpets carefully, they're going to be made out of materials that you really don't want in your house, plastics and other things. Carpet cleaners are made out of junk.
Poisons.
Because they've made out of poisons. They hope that people do not read the labels. And then in support of these things, you see studies that make the front page of a newspaper, like the Stanford study of organic foods. Stanford University, led by authors who have conflicts of interest because they work for the food industry from time to time, the Stanford study said, we've shown that organic food is not more nutritious than food grown conventionally. They started with an idea that we're not going to find more vitamins and we're not going to find more protein and more nutrients in organically grown broccoli. They said, now this certainly doesn't speak to the issue that organic food has fewer pesticides in it. The reason people buy organic food is not because they're looking for more B vitamins or more vitamin
exactly.
A. They're trying to avoid chemicals.
Yes.
So the study was awful, and it made front pages. And it was written, again, by people who have ties to the food industry. It was written by people who had a preconceived notion, like, we're going to show you that there are not more vitamins in your organic tomato. We never said there were more vitamins. All that we're saying is that that intuitively a parent knows that if a child is going to eat a carrot, it would be better to give him a carrot without pesticides than with pesticides. That's common sense.
And it really gets me started. And you can really start, I call it small steps, big impact, to change things. Aerosol sprays, like if you're spraying something around, even when I go to a doctor's office and they have those little, you know, they release I call them the toxic chemicals into the air so it smells like fake cinnamon. Like I hold my nose. We don't need to have fake scents blowing into our environment. Let me ask you this one, because we don't do this in our house. How important is it to remove your shoes when you come in the door?
Oh, it's very important. It's a little bit problematic for some people. They may have worn the wrong socks or have a hole in their socks. But if you've got a child crawling around on your floor, that child is touching, licking, and breathing whatever you brought in from outdoors. So it's not over the top to ask visitors to take off their shoes when they walk into the house with a baby or a toddler crawling around on the floor. It's very important.
So you also talk about one of my favorite topics with a different spin, paper towels. I just see people take 3 or 4 paper towels to wipe off a little spill on the counter, not really being conscious. I mean, I'm the person that people are starting to say, oh gosh, Jean is coming or Mrs. Green is coming. We better not do X. So it's like, it's okay. I'm never mean about it or judgmental. I just observe and I try to keep that poker face. But what you talk about in terms of paper towels is that it's a really good idea to use unbleached paper products and diapers, because the chlorine, I never thought of that, is used to bleach the wood pulp. People don't think of this, Jay. They don't. I'm telling you, I didn't.
You end up with dioxin residues. You end up with toxins. And you see, we know about quality. I can say to you, vinegar and water is good and certain cleaning fluids are bad. We know about quality. We don't know about quantity. I'm not going to tell you that if you pick the wrong furniture polish, you've got an 8% greater chance of problems. We don't know that. We should, by the way, but we don't. But what we do know is that it's better to buy organic, to eat organic carrots. It's better to not use a lot of paper towels. It's better to not spray your house. We can't tell you the quantity. Is it, again, 10% more of what? But if you know that there are alternatives that are not more expensive or not much more expensive and are very easy, use those alternatives.
You know, I just hope that, you know, I'm very inspired to, I will email all of our team. We have a passionate team of 10 people from around the country. I will talk about this show again in my newsletter. What I hope people do is going back to the call to action. And I know that I'm in the process of completing my book, and just the thought of publicizing and getting the word around a book is daunting. What I really hope people do is get your book and use it as a guide for healthy living, because that's what the name of the book could have been. And this is what I love about it.
It's a lot of better names, but go ahead.
It's really simple. Well, see, the thing is, it does limit, but I'm going to do my best to say to people, it's not what you think. Yes, it'll help for all of the hundreds of thousands of parents who are, you know, have autistic children who are thinking of having babies. It will meet its mark and then they'll share it. But you have things that beauty doesn't have to hurt. And that's another thing. That started me on my journey when I went to a seminar on what we were putting on our bodies. And I was like, you've got to be kidding me. So I think that it's a guide for everyday living. Most of us are parents, grandparents, aunts, loving people, grandparents, and to care about our children and our elderly is unbelievable. You have compelling stories about rentals and on. So there's my little diatribe. I can't help it. So thank you, Dr. Jay Gordon, for writing the book, What You Can Do Preventing Autism, What You Can Do to Prevent Your Children Before and After Birth. We did not get to talk about the incredible people like Halle Berry and Julia Roberts and many others that took a stand and made a point to write testimonials in your book. I think
they wrote my foreword. I have some very nice friends.
Very nice friends. And thank you for being a part of my world. And I will be spreading the great word about the work you're doing. And all the best of luck.
Thank you very much.
Okay, make it a great green week. We've got a great show next week that I won't have time to promote, but you can check my website. It's going to be a good one. Sorry, everybody. Make it a great green week.